You are listening to Well Met, a Hearthstone podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com.
Well Met.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode number 45 of Well Met. We're a Hearthstone podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com. I'm John Horstman, and with me this week, we have an incredible crew. First, from Saskatoon, Canada, it is Kevin Hovdestad. Hey Kev.
How you doing, John?
Oh great, how are you?
I have had a rather interesting week. Fair bit to talk about, going to be a good show. I'm excited to have this conversation with my two favorite Hearthstone compatriots.
Compadres. And other things. Okay, fine. Thanks, guys. Over on the other side of the screen, from Kansas City, it is Mr. J.R. Cook. Hey, J.R., welcome to the show.
Hey, John. Good to be here. Excited to hear what Kevin has to say, because I have no idea what's going on, guys. I haven't heard anything.
Yes. So this is exciting news. I can't even wait anymore. I've been practicing this speech for you, Kevin. So I've known Kevin now for about a year now, right, Kev? This is 45 weeks of the show. We probably were working on about a month ahead of time. So I'd say we've been friends for about a year.
Yeah, pretty much right back to the start of 2015. Yeah.
So Kevin, I have to say this. I'm going to brag about Kevin for a second. So Kevin is one of the hardest working people I have ever met. If you've read his stuff, if you have watched his streams or even hung out with us on the show, everybody loves Kevin because they can tell the hard work he puts into everything he does. It's indebatable, undebatable, whatever that word would end up being, not debatable. And so Kevin, you've got some really freaking inciting news this week. Go ahead and share it with everybody.
I'll tell the story because I think the story is okay. The best way to get it across. I couldn't say anything all week, and I've been dying to talk about this. Monday afternoon, I was at the grocery store. Of all the insane things that could be happening in my life, I'm like in the deli buying food, and I got a message on my phone from Blizzard. It says, hey, do you have time to take a quick phone call? And I panicked because I'm in the grocery store. I said, like, I will be home in 20 minutes. I raced out of the store. I forgot half the things I needed to buy, raced home, jumped on my computer and said, okay, I'm here. I'm good. Like, I'm ready. Let's go. Took the call. The call came from Blizzard's Hearthstone community management team, along with the esports team, to let me know that they had reviewed my video submission for the So You Think You Can Cast competition, or whatever you want to call it, that I had one of the strongest entries. The team really enjoyed it. They felt really strongly about my presentation skills and my work ethic and all that sort of stuff. And basically just jumped right in and said, we would like to invite you to come cast some of the Blizzard-sponsored Hearthstone tournaments. What's your availability like? Are you willing to travel? What can you do for us? And we talked back and forth about some of the logistics, about what that might entail. But at the end of the day, by 5 o'clock Monday afternoon, I had been accepted formally as a caster to go and work on the desk on Blizzard's official Hearthstone scene.
We don't get to use that button often, but you get the big applause, sir. That is huge.
Applause just lasts way too long.
Yep, way too, and we're good. So, Kevin, not a lot of people get to say that I'm making it in video games and esports. You're making it in video games and esports. You work really hard. You deserve it. Huge congratulations, my friend. It's a pleasure to know you. And as long as you can keep getting me into those VIP parties, I'm okay if this just keeps going on all year long.
Thanks, man. Honestly, it's incredibly surreal. Even just to look at the list, to go down that list of names and see pro player D2, pro player and well-known UK commentator Soddle, Cora Songbird, who we've talked about and has the, like, basically cred to her name that she, within reason, invented a pretty significant part of the secret paladin meta that we all now all hate so badly. It's an incredible list of people. I'm so privileged to be on that list. It's a little overwhelming. I'm not gonna lie, I'm a little nervous because I really want to do a good job and do right by all the people who are supporting me. So the America's Winter Preliminaries runs February 20th and 21st that weekend. Anybody who has the time and is willing to tune in, watch a little bit of the show, give us some feedback, that would mean the world to me.
We'll be there, Kev. We'll be there. We're going to make Kevin t-shirts. If you guys in the chat room listening to the show want to make Kevin t-shirts, we'll make Kevin t-shirts. We'll rock them for you. We'll be your support. JR, how are we going to top that, man? We can't top that. Maybe we should have done that at the end of the show. I don't know.
Yeah, we might as well end the show now and just get it over with, because it's not going to get any better, right?
That's not really it. But you actually do, JR, you do actually have some pretty cool stuff going on as well. Go ahead and tell us about it.
Oh, definitely not up to Kevin's par, but next week, I talked about it a little bit last week, SoPro Gaming here in Overland Park, they've been starting to do more and more Hearthstone tournaments. They're having one this next Saturday, which I believe is the 31st, if I remember correctly. 30th, actually. And they're doing it. It's just going to be a conquest format. Bring four decks, one ban. And I'm going to enter that. Has a $175 prize pool, I think. I mean, that's not a lot of money, but it's cool that it's local and I get to go, you know, play that. So that's my thing. I like doing tournaments. I like playing in tournaments. So that's what I've been spending this last week doing, is trying to prepare what decks I'm going to bring, because there hasn't been a lot of tournaments lately until very, very, very recently. This last week, which we'll talk about here in a bit. So just trying to prepare and figure out what decks I want to bring. It's been kind of a fun week of doing that and play testing some stuff. And I'll be honest, I hate to say it, guys. I hate to say it, but I'm probably going to bring Secret Paladin and Aggro Shaman.
I was just going to say, Kevin, I'm going to tell you the decks that JR is going to bring. And I was going to say Secret Paladin, Aggro Shaman. Ready? Number three.
Please tell me it's Face Hunter.
Face Hunter. Yes. Number three. So, and then number four is going to be like, Aggro Warrior.
No.
What's a fourth archetype that JR hates and disdains on this show and then takes to tournaments? What else makes perfect sense? You probably bring Aggro Druid or something. You were really hot on that deck for a while.
I actually considered that, but I think mid-range Druid is going to be a big one.
Yeah.
And the other one is probably just going to be Zulok.
That's a good pick right now. I'm into this. I like the Zulok pick.
Surprised, I guess, that you're not taking Freeze Mage, just given what's out there. Although, I guess it's tough. Like, it's a tough one to pilot, so.
And then everyone will hate you.
Yeah, I'm just not also very... I'm not very good with Freeze Mage. Two, I do not have the patience to play Freeze Mage.
Nope.
That's fair. Honestly, like, I don't pick decks like that to take to ladder or tournaments, because I just lose the attention span to actually... shouldn't say that. Like, everyone's going to bring Freeze Mage to the winter prelims now. Oh, God.
It's like one of the big reasons I never brought Grim Patron in a Tay Day to a tournament. I just couldn't bring myself to play. It's just one of those play styles of just, I just don't have the patience for it. I'm honestly, like, even though I give it a hard time, like Aggro Shaman and stuff like that, I've always been kind of a high aggro player and even Magic the Gathering. So I'm just not much of a control player at all. I like to just pump out my turns and just go and
smork
Freeze Mage.
Let's be honest, I don't want to jump the gun here, but if you want to know how I react to Freeze Mage, you should watch the post show last week, where the first deck we queued against in literally a 25 minute was a Malagos Freeze Mage. By the beginning of it, I was doing fine. And by the end of it, I was like a beer and a half in because
it drove you to drink.
It drove me to alcohol. That is how much I hate Freeze Mage. I'm just making snarky comments the whole time. It was the absolute worst.
Yeah, the look on your face at the end of that, though, was priceless. Like, if there was ever a Twitch emote to have on this show, that would be it.
Yeah, just the
Freeze John.
The soulless eyes just kind of just staring back right into the camera. It was, man, that was not a good time for me.
So how about you, John? What have you been doing in Hearthstone this week?
You know, I didn't get a whole lot of time for Hearthstone this week, but I did get time to sneak up to rank 9. I actually got to sit down with Ray C591, pretty new to the Hearthstone scene, which is pretty cool. He plays over one of the players for Vicious Syndicate. We're a big fan of them and all that they do. They bring some awesome things. Tuesday Night Hype, one of the biggest recurring Tuesdays tournaments. I don't know. It's a big deal because it's one of the first things to give world championship points, and they do that stuff. So they've got a great thing. And I got to sit down with him for about 2 hours and we just played and get to really get into his mind. He's a former competitive Pokemon player moving into Hearthstone. He's got some multiple top 100 finishes and a top 50 finish in like 8 months of playing the game. Like, the dude is just very smart, thinks about the game very uniquely. You should go check out, he's on Twitter, RayC591. I think he's on the same thing for Twitch. Really smart guy. And also, if you're looking for a Hearthstone coach, really reasonable rates. So you should go check that out. But yeah, so I got to sneak up to rank 9. I've got actually extra time this week, so I'm going to be trying to push up to the ladder, get, you know, hopefully around rank 3 or so is where I'm usually happy to kind of sit and fail the rest of the way. So hopefully we get up there. But yeah, not a whole lot. First week of the semester, right? Not getting a lot of time for Hearthstone.
Yeah, I know that feeling all too well. Yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I played as much as I could, but honestly, the time I did have to play this week, I spent a lot of it helping other people out. I had a lot of friends and people who were excited about my little announcement, such as it was, and wanted to kind of get into the game and get caught up on what was going on so they'd be able to tune in and enjoy the tournament when the time comes, and trying to teach people how to, you know, play and relearning what it's like to play from the bottom, where you go to build a deck and I grab all the cards I can from their collection and I look at the list. I'm like, oh, we need to put 16 more cards in this deck. What cards do you even have? It was a good experience. It was fun to kind of start over from the bottom.
Speaking of starting over from the bottom, let's talk about some news.
This Week in Hearthstone, Heroes of Warcraft.
We got some big news this week. We already went ahead and broke down. We've got some exciting new casting coming to the winter preliminaries here, February 20th and 21st. But Kevin, we've got a ranked spotlight. We were talking about Fibonacci a little bit a couple weeks ago, or was it last week, 2 weeks ago? I think it was 2 weeks ago. We were talking about Fibonacci. And since then, the Hearthstone team has come out with a ranked spotlight on Fibonacci. Why don't we go ahead and talk about it?
Yeah, so I think it's really cool that Blizzard clearly listens to our show, and we say, hey, you know what would be really cool is if, you know, someone captured what the top players on the ladder were using for decks, and then like a week later, magically, what's on the Hearthstone blog. So thanks, guys, for, you know, taking our suggestions under advisement. They had a really awesome write-up, bit of an interview with Fibonacci, who's not a super well-known face in the Hearthstone community, because even though he's done really well for himself on the ladder, he doesn't do a lot of streaming or interviews or that sort of stuff. He doesn't have social media accounts. A handful of people in the pro community have him on Skype, and that's about it. So he did sort of go through and talk about how he was able to succeed at winning the ladder, the America's ladder specifically, in the December ranked play season, and provided his deck lists, the warrior and mage deck lists he was using. So he ran a modified control warrior deck, runs a lot of the things you would expect as far as removal and the kind of core spells and minions that typically get used in control warrior, but did have some cool one-offs. He used a tournament medic, which was sort of new, and also ran Deathwing as sort of an ultimate removal at the late game stages to help him sort of respond to decks that maybe he didn't have other answers against. His other deck was a Malagos Freeze Mage, the John special, and has since been made very popular on the ladder and is all over the place. So they're both really cool lists. If you haven't seen them, you should hit up the official Hearthstone blog and check it out. Fibonacci did go on in the article to say that he does stream a little bit now. He's going to start doing that more, I think, in this year, now that he's gotten a lot of really good exposure and sort of feedback, because I think there's some really great opportunity there for him. And he's hopefully a player that we're going to see a lot more during this year's tournaments.
I thought it was interesting. Like, he was talking about his style and what he does during ladders, and he'll find a deck like that was very good against certain metas, and then he'll hold on to it. And then finally, the final day of the ladder, he'll just play that, because everybody will be playing whatever is high up in the meta, and he'll just play exactly what counters it, what he's already tested against, and just destroy. And that's how he gets so high up. I thought that was, I'd never even thought about that. I thought that was genius, to be honest. And that's obviously how he's able to get rank one, like, what, three or four times in the last year now?
Yeah. He's also such a smart techer, right? He's so smart with the tech cards that he chooses. I mean, Tournament Medic, Deathwing, Malagos Freeze Mage, Malagos! It's just the worst, but the best. And he thinks about the game really unique. There's immense respect among highly competitive players because of that. I really like, too, his answer. He goes, the question was, is there any advice or thoughts you'd like to share to your fans or other aspiring competitive players? He responds, if you want to get, quote unquote, good at this game, you have to play a lot or get a coach or both. So we get emails almost every week, like, what can I do to get better at the game? How do I get better? How do I get in the competitive scene? From Fibonacci, the king of the ladder, play a lot, get a coach, or both. There you go.
Which is what we've said in the past too, right?
True. He probably took it from us, actually. But
yeah.
In fairness, right, it's a very different thing than a lot of other competitive games. Like, we've constantly gotten people making the comparison, whether it's in tweets or emails or just in conversations with us in Twitch chat, to games like chess, right? And how you have to think, you know, multiple moves in advance and be aware of the strategies that have developed and stuff. But for chess, I can send people to a library to get a book. I can recommend tons of resources that are exhaustive and written by people who have 25 and 30 year careers in chess. Well, no one has written a, you know, several hundred page book. No one has a 30 year career in Hearthstone. So right now, the best way to get any kind of practical, useful experience and get better is going to be 100% hands on.
Yep. 100%. So yeah. And cool. And, you know, great job to Fibonacci. He's always high up in the ladder. What was it, 3 or 4 times in the last year that he's hitting number one on the ladder? That's,
yeah,
that's not fluke. That is skill, straight up skill. You can call it RNG all you want, but when there's players like that, there's a lot of skill to this game. Let's go ahead and jump in to deck shuffling. This was a surprise. Kevin, you want to break this one down for us too?
Can do, yeah. So the little innocuous tweet that came out, someone tweeted Ben Brode with a question about the nature of how cards that get shuffled into your deck work. And I believe was the example used Roaring Torch or whatever? The mage card? Was that what it was?
And Forgotten Torch.
Forgotten Torch into, yeah, okay. And so the question was, what does that do? Like, how does it just get inserted randomly into your deck? How does that work? And Brode, out of just nowhere, like unprompted, said they actually reshuffle the entire deck. So when you put a card into your deck in some capacity, and I don't know if this applies to all cards that go into your deck, like if Entomb and everything would work the same way, but basically it reshuffles the entirety of that deck, which actually, when you think about it, makes a lot of sense, because otherwise there would be information available to the player based on when that card came back out. Or you could, in theory, potentially, like to JR's point from weeks ago, try to find some way to manipulate that. Doubtful that a meaningful way would exist, but people would try, right? It would be create a situation where people would try to break the game. So in reality, that information can't be available client side. It just totally reorganizes your remaining cards, which is a very kind of interesting one-off thing as far as how mechanics are applied. Is there anything you guys think this changes as far as the average player's experience, or is this just kind of a cool, like, one-off fact?
For me, I'll let John go because I know he has a little, or here in a minute, but because I know he has a little bit different opinion as I do on this because he's got all the stats and stuff. But for me, it doesn't make a whole lot of difference because I kind of felt that that was probably the case anyway. But it's nice to know that behind the scenes, things are getting shuffled a little bit. It's also nice to know that if they ever make any cards that actually manipulate the deck and where you can place a card within the deck, it would be good to know for like, okay, if I have put this card three down or something like that, and I know I'm going to draw it in three turns, but then I play this card, oh no, it's going to shuffle my deck now that I know I'm not going to get that card. Stuff like that's important to know, but they don't have any cards that really manipulate the deck yet. But if they ever come out with them, it will be important to know those kind of things.
Well, and that's one of the key things. Right now, no, there's not a whole lot of real practical impact this makes, especially for the average player. At high ends, there definitely can be, and as more mechanics are introduced, even more so. And just to go back for a second, Kevin, you kind of talked about when it matters. The key term is shuffle. Anytime the word shuffle is on a card, so Entomb shuffles it into your deck. Forgotten Torch, Gang Up, Ancient Shade. There's in total, 9, 10, 11 different cards that essentially shuffle your deck. And so that's the key thing to go. But back to your original point. No, there's not a whole lot of impact that this is going to really have, especially now, but probably as more cards get introduced into the game, you know, there's probably a pretty high probability that it will happen. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think we probably face an inevitability mechanically where something gets introduced to the game where a player, for example, gets to draw the top two cards from their deck and keep one in their hand and put the other one at the bottom of their deck or something to that effect. There's been lots of examples of that with different competitive card games over the years. I would be shocked, like truly shocked, if that never came to Hearthstone in some form, in which case, yeah, knowing that you placed a card at the bottom of your deck, maybe it's an important card and you want to force a shuffle to try to move its position. Like, again, you can't really control it. You don't get to decide the outcome, but it's information and you can apply that information in a way that previously wasn't possible because it wasn't a mechanical factor in the game right now.
And there's definitely a lot of ways too, especially with like move, you know, shuffle or put a card at the bottom of your deck. Imagine, you know, having a mana cheaper version of removal, but it goes to the bottom. So like, you know, that you're never going to see that again until the end. And then now you have a shuffle card that does it. There are a lot of implications that shuffling can really have on the placement of cards. So,
yeah. It definitely probably is more relevant, I guess, now that we've discussed it to the future of the game, because it's one of those design space limitation things, right? This does mean that in the future, other mechanics are going to probably interact with shuffling.
Absolutely. All right, JR, I can't believe I'm about to say this, but give us a breakdown on the esports news in Hearthstone this week.
Oh, man. So,
Wait, sorry. I don't want to interrupt you, but I don't want people who are just listening to think I'm an absolute jerk for saying what I just said. JR has said multiple times on the show he really doesn't care for Hearthstone tournaments and Hearthstone esports in the sense where he doesn't really like to sit and watch tournaments and things like that. This week, when we were going through our show notes, I go ahead and look, and there's like half a page of tournament news, and it was all put in by JR, and he's watched it all. So JR is going to take us through the esports news for Hearthstone this week.
Well, I've been
like in the back end. We just have like the mind blown GIF on loop because it's.
Well, the reason why is one, I've been trying to study up for the tournament for next week, right? So it's like, okay, what are people playing right now? What do I have to be aware of? You know, what are people bringing to tournaments? That was kind of one of the big reasons why I've kind of paid attention to it quite a bit this last week, especially this weekend. Probably one of the biggest events that happened this weekend, though, was DreamHack, the Asus ROG 10th anniversary with a $9,500 prize pool. They did it last man standing. They had 16 players. It was invite only, so it would have had Ostakaka, Tice, Life Coach, RDU, some of the bigger names. So this, just because it was invite only and not an open, this wouldn't have been available for WCS points. So in that tournament, Tice actually didn't even advance. He couldn't even win a game, which was kind of mind-blowing to me, because as we were saying, he was probably the best player in 2015, and he's not starting out 2016 in the greatest way. In the tournament, though, we had first place, we had Orange winning out. Second place, Super JJ, which I know that we have talked in the past that he is an up-and-coming player, someone to watch out for in 2016, and here he is in a major tournament getting second place. And then third and fourth, we had Mr. Yogat and Ecop rounding it out for the top four. So did either of you get a chance to watch this or have anything to say?
I didn't get to watch this, but you just kind of talked about Super JJ. And again, he got dominated by Orange in the finals, 3-0. But Super JJ had to beat Ostkaka the first round, and he swept him 3-0. And then beat Ecop 3-1. So Super JJ, again, we've never debated that he's a great player, but really establishing a really strong start to 2016 against some huge, huge players. I don't know what he did. Oh, he went 6-0 in the group stages too.
Yeah.
Like, holy cow. Like, dude's on fire. Watch out for him. Maybe we should get him on the show before he blows up and gets super famous or something. But that's really surprising to me. But I always love the Asus Republic of Gamers stuff. I always think that they do a really good job overall.
Yeah, so next up, we're going to kind of go into the Asian scene a little bit here. I'm just going to kind of blast through this part really quick. But we had the OG and Korean Master Season 4 end. It started on December 19th and finished this weekend. First place went to Segoe. Or Seaguy, I don't know how to pronounce his name, so I'm just going to go with that. Second place went to Time, and third and fourth went to Stilo and Irony. And then we had...
I like that.
Yeah.
Irony is a great name for a Hearthstone player.
And then we had the Gold Series 2015 there in China, which had a $50,000 prize pool. And it was kind of cool because the winner could choose cash or a 500G pure gold Hearthstone statue. I'm going to ask you guys here in a minute what you would have chosen, but I'm going to finish this out real quick. We had 32 players. First place went to Zhang Bo, who, that's the first time I've heard of this guy. You guys might know him. The other two I've heard of before. Second place went to Zoro, and third place went to Magic Wand. So if you guys had a chance towards money, let's say $30,000 might have been first place, I'm not sure, or a pure gold Hearthstone statue, what would you choose?
Oh, man. I mean, you have to look at the pictures of this statue. If you haven't, like, look up Gold Series 2015. You'll get a link to the Liquipedia entry for this tournament. That statue is really nice. I mean, obviously, $50,000 is a lot of money. I think the actual prize pool, it was, after conversion, was something like $48,000,
something
like that.
Yeah, it just
rounded it up. Yeah, exactly. Whatever. That's a good-sized chunk of change. But it's money, and I'll be the first to admit that, like, money comes and goes in your life. It's not gonna do a lot for you. Like, that's gonna buy you a, you know, mid-sized car or something, but that statue, I mean, would be one of a kind, irreplaceable, appreciate in value over time. Like, I think I'd have to take the statue, as insane as that sounds, staring down the barrel of $50,000. Like, $50,000 would pay off my car, it would do a lot of stuff. But that statue, man, that's like, just looking at it, it's like a siren song, like that or a check. I don't think I could look at the check and take it as seriously, as insane as that sounds. I keep, like, that's a lot of money to turn down, but that statue is, ah.
Come on, Kev. So what you do, here's what you do. You take the money, you invest $3,000 and get them to recast it and gold plate it. You're done. That's all you have to do. You get the best of both worlds. Get a nice gold-plated thing. You're not lifting it up. You're just putting it on your nice fireplace mantle while you're smoking a pipe and reading The Hobbit. So, you know, what else do you need it for? So that's what you do. That's the answer, JR.
Okay, I'd probably take the statue just because I can turn around and sell it if I ever needed to. And statue's cool. The gold and I like
the gold standard.
Yep. I got to go Ron Paul here. You got the gold. That's my future investment, right?
Yeah.
No, I don't do that. I like trinkets like that. It's just one of a kind stuff. I wouldn't be able to turn it down. I had to have to take the statue over the money. So
my question is the photo a mock-up? Or is it actually, like, did they have to cast the statue anyway? Because I would be really curious if now that statue is just sitting in a vault somewhere waiting for them to run the next one, like Gold Series 2016 or something. Because it does seem kind of curious that, like, if they've made the statue and they also have to have the money on hand to pay out the prize pool, I would have some questions there.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure.
I'm just thinking out loud. But yeah, it's nice looking statue. Like, get a look at that picture. It's worth your time.
Yeah, we'll definitely be posting that in the show notes, pictures of the statue, so that you guys can check it out. Last but not least, this one just ended not too long ago, maybe about 6 or 7 hours ago. We had the Starlighter I-League Star Series, also with the $50,000 prize pool. First place went to Lan Xingzi from China. I think he went by Robin or something like that at one point. But on stream, he was going by that name. Second place went to our friends from Fade to Karma, Cypher. And third place went to Kalento. The interesting thing about this tournament, though, was the grand finals. There's a little bit of controversy behind it because the very first game, Cypher was playing his Reno Lock deck. And I'm just going to call him Robin because I don't want to sit here and try to pronounce his name over and over again. Robin was playing Secret Paladin. And Cypher had gotten past all the Secret Paladin stuff, was winning the game pretty handedly, probably had three turns left and probably would have won at that point. And they had a double disconnect. And unfortunately, because he did not have lethal on the board, the admins did rule that they had to replay the game. And it was a best of seven, very first game. And then they replayed it and Robin turned around, just wiped the board with him. Ended up winning the full thing 3-1, should have won, or 4-1, best of seven, should have won really 4-0, but he missed lethal on the final game. Very obvious lethal, really. It was just a little bit of controversy in how that was handled. There was, especially in Twitch chat, there's a lot of very upset people. What do you guys think about this kind of situation? And what would you... Did the admins make the right call? Was there something else that could have been done? Or do you have any suggestions on how to avoid this kind of thing in the future? Kevin, I know that you had some things right before the show that you talked about.
Yeah, so I mean, I caught the controversy kind of real time. I didn't have a chance to watch the whole tournament, but I was around while it was going on, working on some other stuff. And I guess I just feel like, obviously, the admins had to do what they had to do. You can't fault them for operating within the construct of the rules as they were set out and working within the scope of the tools they have. You can't declare someone a winner because they're ahead by hit points or something. Like, you have to say the game wasn't over, so we're going to do it again. And that really is unfortunate because there is such a high level of variance. Like, if you were to take those two decks and make those two players play, you know, 100 games, it's going to be a totally different result each time because the cards are going to come out in a totally different order each time. There's just so many possibilities, right? Having said that, my hope is that down the road, with Hearthstone having such an awesome burgeoning professional scene and so many amazing opportunities for people to play at a competitive level and people really loving it, like the fan base for this game is unreal. It skyrocketed out of a PAX announcement where everybody kind of scratched their heads into arguably one of the three or four biggest esports in the whole world right now. At that point, I think the onus is on Blizzard to say, like, we need to do some work on our tools for that component of how this game is played. And something like how StarCraft has the ability to resume from a replay or pick back up from a log file would be super good for situations like this, because the swinginess of Hearthstone is an inherent thing, and we know that. But we're not just talking about boombot RNG here. We're talking about the way that, to, you know, what we were just talking about earlier, about how cards are shuffled in your deck. That's an insane amount of pressure to put someone under when they're playing for, in this case, the grand final of a major tournament and a fair bit of money. I would love to see Blizzard work on how they're going to standardize and develop the tools to make it so that these kinds of situations are more manageable, I guess, because in the future, as the game gets more serious, as the prize pools get larger, as the tournament scene grows, which ostensibly it's going to continue to do, I don't see any signs that Pro Hearthstone is going to slow down anytime soon. That's going to be really important. We can't afford to have whole tournaments decided on the fact that somebody disconnects from Battle.net for 30 seconds. That's insane.
Well, and something too, because I totally agree with Kevin. So as far as I know, there is not a client-based version of Hearthstone. Am I correct in that?
You're correct. Yes. They don't even do a client-based version for like the Hearthstone World Championships. They're right. Both connecting to Battle.net on whatever technology is on stage.
Exactly. And in there lies, I think, the fundamental issue. Right now, there's no tool, just rules that protect from disconnects, right? Which is what happened. Basically, if you have lethal in hand, or it's in hand, right? Because they can see it. So as long as you have lethal in hand, you have the ability to do that or to take the win or whatever. Otherwise, it's a total replay. But they need, because they're setting themselves up for failure here. They just need, to Kevin's point, all you need is kind of a, not even like a resume feature, which also I don't think is that hard, but even just a board state feature that allows you to go back through a board state up until a certain point and hit proceed. The cards in your deck are exactly where they were. Cards in your opponent deck were exactly where you were. The cards that were played. The board state's there. The cards in your hand are there. And you should just be able to go ahead and keep playing going forward.
The reason, I guess, that I'm pitching something like Resume from Replay is that it has so many other applications, right? Let's say that you and I are, you know, both working through a scenario, a coaching scenario with somebody who's a patron of the show, for example. We can actually grab the board state and take it and play through it and try the different options. You can actually, instead of, you know, posting a screenshot of a lethal puzzle that you've constructed on some hacky third party tool online, like you can actually just say, okay, this is the game. This is exactly how the game was. You can see what cards have been played. You can see what's on the board, what's in the hands. You can actually just pick up a game at any point during any game and work your way through it, which would be a really incredible tool for learning about the possibilities, experimenting with different outcomes, testing a bunch of the possibilities, stuff that we just can't do right now. And we have to think through it academically, which isn't a bad thing. Like, I think being able to construct those variables in your head is really important too. But as a teaching tool, as a learning tool, as a way to reinforce the validity of the results of the competitive scene, it would be enormous. It's been incredible for Pro StarCraft. Like, I cannot express how great it's been that when a player disconnects or somebody's keyboard malfunctions or something, they just pause the game, shut it down, fix whatever was wrong, and pick the game back up exactly where they left off, so no one gets a benefit from a disconnect, because that's an awful, evil feeling in a professional tournament setting. I mean, that's, you know, a player has a problem with their tennis racket, so we throw out all the points their opponent has scored. Like, that's insane. You can't do that in a competitive scene. You just can't.
Yeah, and I've run tournaments in the past and fireside gatherings and stuff, and you know, I've had 80, 90, 100 players show up to them, and just trying to run a tournament and having a rule in there about disconnects, because in this case you're running something that's in front of everybody. Everybody's seeing what's going on. In open tournaments, you know, or in an open, it's a little bit different because everybody's kind of playing off on their own. There's not really a lot of oversight because there's, you know, 50, 60 games going on at the same time. When two players have a disconnect, it gets a little funky on how to manage that, because it's like, well, just replay it, you know, hope for the best. I'm sorry. But then you might have a player that's just sitting there and always getting that bad hand or mulligan or something. Maybe they're disconnecting on purpose. but you don't know. You don't have, as an admin, I don't have any way of really proving that. So it would get rid of a lot of that possible cheating, especially since Blizzard's really starting to push these open tournaments to get into the WCS as well. I think it's something that they are going to have to really address, not only from the high level, but also, you know, in like these other tournaments, open tournaments, to help admins out quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think there's going to be development. What it is, we won't know. I mean, this is where we all on 3-1-2-3 tournament mode, right? Like, there's going to be something down the road that probably solves some of these problems. I'm just excited to see what it is. And I'm hopeful that we see it sooner rather than later.
Yep. I agree.
Yeah. Anything else here to add to the competitive scene in the last week? I think we hit it really well.
The only other thing is Surrender joined Team Na'Vi. That was the other thing that I had on there. If you guys have anything you wanted to add to that, that was the only thing I had written.
And Surrender, if I remember correctly, he was number 10 on the Players to Watch in 2016, the article that we reviewed a few weeks back?
He was on the list. I don't remember exactly where, but for sure, he was definitely up there. I also
10 or 7.
Yeah. From now on, I think we make JR pronounce all names of pro players because I like the JR pronunciations.
Ostakaka.
Is it really that bad?
No, it's no, not. No, it's great.
It's fine. It's fine.
That's the way back. All right, Kevin, take us into the meta.
Beat him or join him.
Oh, no.
Yeah, this week we actually have a meta report to talk about, thank goodness. So Tempo Storm is back with meta snapshot number 44. The fact that they skipped a week means that their numbering system is no longer synchronized with ours, which makes me very sad. But we do have a new meta report from them, and I think there's going to be some disagreements this week. I know a little while back, the last time we looked through their list, we were all sort of, you know, nodding our heads in general agreement about placements and rankings. This week, I don't know if that'll be the case. So the big thing with Tempo Storm's list this week is tier one. The four lists they're classifying as the best and most optimized for ladder play right now are Midrange Druid, Secret Paladin, Reno Lock, and Freeze Mage. Of note is that Midrange Druid has dropped Darnassus Aspirant pretty much entirely, which I think is pretty crazy. JR, those four as the top four, what are your thoughts?
I agree mostly. I would probably put Zulok ahead of Reno Lock at this point. I would have had that as a tier one and Reno Lock as the tier two. Man, Freeze Mage, I hate it up there as a tier one. But I don't know. I don't know what else I would put up there, to be honest. Probably the biggest surprises to me is the fact that Midrange Paladin, which was tier one last time we talked about this, dropped all the way to tier three. And Murloc Paladin has jumped up to tier two at number nine.
Well, I think that's exactly why, right? I mean, Murloc Paladin is vastly superior to Midrange Paladin, and Secret Paladin obviously is really dang good. So it makes sense. I think that's a big fall, but at the same time, if you're running Paladin, you probably shouldn't be running Midrange Paladin because it really doesn't do anything for you versus Secret or Murloc Paladin.
I mean, Murloc Paladin is probably better in such a control heavy meta for the same reason that Midrange Druid is really good, right? That burst damage and the ability to push so much damage makes you really, really effective in such a control heavy meta, right? It allows you to push an amount of damage that beats most control decks outright. I think I'm with JR on Zu versus Reno. I think Zu is in a much better place right now. There's been several people who have hit top tier legend in just recent memory here, like rank one legend using variants on Zu, and like old school variants on Zu. Like, we're talking Direwolf Alpha is back as an activator, mm-hmm. and there's been dozens of major articles written on the importance of positioning in Zu lately, which if you haven't seen those, you got to hit up some of the, you know, core Hearthstone fan sites or the competitive Hearthstone subreddit, because there's a lot of good stuff out there. On the whole, I don't know that I disagree with this report in broad strokes. John, your thoughts on tier one. What do you think here?
I think Zulok should definitely be in there. We had three players in the last week hit number one in their respective regions with Zulok. which means, I mean, to hit number one, it means that you're having, you know, 80-85%+ win rate, right? So that's a good deck. That's not just a lucky streak. That's a good deck. Skill matters a lot in the top 25. Well, top, I mean, legend in general, but especially that top 25, it's very skill-based. It's doing very well right now. So I would say that another one that I really would like to see jump into tier two is Aggro Paladin. Aggro Paladin has great matchups, should be coming up. We should be seeing more of it. We're maybe 2 weeks away from seeing it in the meta report. I'm going to call it right now and say that Aggro Paladin's due for a push up. It's got some really favorable matchups, and I think the meta is right for it. So something to pay attention to as these Reno decks and heavy control decks are kind of waning a little bit. I mean, Freeze Mage is really the big heavy control deck that you're seeing. And then, yeah, all the way down to Control Priest and Control Warrior at like 10 and 11 or 11 and 12, right around there. So I think that you're going to see Aggro Paladin come up into tier two here in the next week or two.
And it's interesting that you say that, because the thing that sticks out to me the most about the way the meta looks right now is if you go top to bottom on this list, Temple Storm right now is ranking 29 decks on this list. And in 29 decks, depending on your definition, like, I don't know how you guys categorize some of these decks, like, for example, maybe like Zoo or Mech Mage or whatever, but there's only maybe in the entirety of those 29 decks, two pure aggro decks on this list in Aggro Shaman and Face Hunter. Like, aggro as a concept is just on the down and out right now. There's so little that's effective because there's so many tools to stall and to hold aggro off. People are losing left, right, and center to Death Lords and Reno and the incredible board presence that people can develop with Zoo and Secret Paladin. There's really very little in terms of legitimate effective aggro. And yet, to look at the meta, it's so ripe. It's so ripe for aggro to make a huge comeback. You've got all of these mid-rangey decks, right? Druid, Secret Paladin, Zoo, sitting at the top, Temple Mage. Like, there's all these very kind of like efficient, designed to beat control decks that are eking out big wins and dominating the top of the ladder. Even stuff like Patron Warrior, Murloc Paladin, like, they are fundamentally combo / mid-range style decks, right? And that's really what's owning and driving the meta right now. It's pushing Control Priest, Control Warrior, Malilock, all the classic sort of control decks down into like low tier two, even high tier three, if you look at things like, you know, Dragon Priest or the old Demon Handlock. There's got to be something, like, somewhere out there. Maybe it's Aggro Paladin. Maybe you're right, John, but there's something out there that could just clean house right now with really, really good aggro. I don't know what it is. I don't know which class has the tools in the current meta. I don't know if maybe we're waiting for aggro to get a shot in the arm in the next expansion, but something somewhere has to make aggro work again.
I also think, though, that's probably why you see aggro shamans so high in tier two. And you're right, Zulok is not it's not an archetypical aggro deck by any measure, but it is a very fast deck. It's a deck that definitely speed-wise beats out these other decks significantly. So I don't know if I would agree with you that I wouldn't call it an aggro deck, but at the same time, I wouldn't differentiate it enough to say that there aren't fast decks doing a lot of work and taking advantage of the really strong decks that we're seeing right now in Tier 1 and Tier 2.
I mean, it really depends on your definition of aggro. If your definition of aggro is just sit there and go face, go face, go face, or just win by turn 7, then I guess, you know, Zulok may not be considered, Zulok wouldn't be considered an aggro deck. But if you consider an aggro deck as something that's very fast, convert, put out a lot of minions, can really easily control the board and win also at times very quickly, I would also consider Zulok an aggro deck. Based on that, it just really depends on your definition. Like I said at the beginning of the show, I like to play aggro style decks. So that's, even though I'm not a big fan of aggro shaman, because the problem I have with aggro shaman is I don't feel it's very consistent. Whereas Zulok is actually very, very consistent. And what I want to get out of a deck and be able to win quickly, aggro druid was another one that I felt was, at the time, very consistent, depending on what you're playing against. So I, the only thing that I found interesting though, and Kevin kind of brought this up at the beginning of this, is the fact that mid-range druid has taken out the decks have now taken out Darnassus Aspirant, which we had considered very early on as something that would really help out mid-range druid. As of about probably about a month ago, we saw that kind of reduced down to one. People played with one instead of two, and now we're starting to see deck lists without it. And I think that's a pretty significant change, to be honest. And I'm kind of wondering if you guys had any opinions on that and why people would be taking out Darnassus Aspirant from mid-range druid.
Kevin just said it. There's not enough aggro there, so you don't need Darnassus Aspirant anymore, because control warriors, I mean, you just hard mulligan for your removal against that aspirant, and then you totally stall druid out. When you see aggro come back in, you're going to see aspirant come back in because it's such an immediate threat. It at least stalls your opponent for a turn for the most part, and it has to be dealt with. So
yeah, I mean, to give you some context, right? The first time I hit legend was August of last year playing a mid-range druid deck, and my deck was very close to this one, but faster because we were in a much more aggressive meta. So I ran aspirants. I also ran druid of the saber, because having something to play T1, T2 was so important. You needed to be able to coin out a 2-drop or play Living Roots or innervate something out or get started on ramp with an aspirant. Like, you had to put something on the board. If you had to hero power on turn two, you were dead because you were going to get run over by aggro decks. Whereas now, because we're in such a control heavy meta, I really got to work on that if I'm going to be a caster, guys.
You're getting
that's not
John
fly.
Syndrome.
John syndrome. Oh, God. I didn't realize it was contagious. You'll see Druid drop things like Shade of Naxxramas, because Shade of Naxxramas does not fly in anything resembling an aggro-driven meta. You can only run it when you can safely leave it on the board and let it develop. You can't let a minion sit and not act for multiple turns when you're trying to survive against aggro. And Shade of Naxxramas trades down, not up, if you're forced to do that.
Yeah, I guess for me, the Darnassus Aspirant was always something that it seemed like lately when I've been playing it, it always gets killed right off the bat, right? I never really get that extra mana advantage that you really want from Darnassus Aspirant to begin with. And I thought maybe that's the reason why it's been taken out, or at least dwindled down and eventually taken out. I had actually been toying with about a week or two ago taking it out of my decks because of that reason. I like to have the predictability ahead of time on knowing exactly when I'm going to be able to play what I want to play, like maybe a sooner Dr. Boom or something like that. And I was just finding that Wild Growth was easier because it was more predictable, because I knew that Darnassus Aspirant was going to die right off the bat, and Wild Growth is a permanent effect. So I actually never considered the aggro reasoning for it. So that was an interesting perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing too is that, again, control-driven meta, Aspirant does nothing for you late game. At minimum, Wild Growth at least is a cycle, right? It lets you reach for an answer or something to develop the board, whereas Aspirant, you just have to drop and be kind of hung with. It doesn't help you at all. It's the kind of card where, and there's lots of examples of this in the game, Flame Imp is another really great one, where if you can't play it in the early game, you're not going to play it at all. It's just going to sit in your hand dead because it's more of a liability to play it than to not.
And Living Roots, adding another Living Roots gives you, either makes your combo 16 for 10 mana, gets rid of the second half of that Sludge Belcher, where we've all been there. We're so close, we got that second half of a Sludge Belcher. It makes sense to see both Living Roots now, because it's not, even a, normally one mana is awful to draw in the end game, and as your only card, it still is, but it's got really practical uses that make it so good. And again, Aspirant will be back. It's just not the hero we need right now.
Yeah, for me, I actually flipped it.
It's the hero
I wasn't
we deserve.
Playing. For me, I actually flipped it so I wasn't playing it. I was playing more in-game cards, replacing it with more in-game cards. So I had added like another Ancient of Lore and a Ancient of War actually in mine, and it seemed to perform a lot better.
So. Yeah. All right. Meta solidified. We've got mail.
We've got mail.
Every week, you guys, you can send us your emails to wellmet@blizzpro.com. We love to tackle these We do our best to do it. We probably should be better at it. We actually got an email or a couple of emails a couple of weeks ago and didn't get to do it with Jocelyn. We already had a long enough show as it is. So we're going to go ahead and tackle them this week. The first email is from Tony S. It's a little bit of a long one, so bear with me, but I'll do my best to break it down. He says, "Hey guys, great job with the podcast. As a podcaster, I understand all the time and energy it takes, and you guys have a real professional sound. Kudos. Two things on accessibility come to mind. The following, or sorry, I've condensed it a bit. That was a note from myself that I wasn't supposed to read. The first is Hearthstone is so popular because it is accessible. Simple cards, intuitive gameplay, and the game is on virtually every platform. Keeping the game accessible to all is of utmost importance. I have two solutions that I think will help. Number one, keep the cards you get in an arena run. In Magic, you keep the card when you're in limited format, and this helps you build your collection. Arena wards aren't enough. Building your collection a pack at a time is not enough. Because you don't have to own any cards, you can make the argument that Arena is more quote-unquote noob-friendly, so Arena could help players more interconstructed. Number two, allow players to disenchant golden basic cards. A lot of people don't care about the gold cards, and being able to do well to do so will help players build a collection of important cards rather than having basic golden cards that nobody uses. Ultimately, I think the solution is not one big solution like discounts or giving away the core set, but is instead a few tweaks like above. What do you think, Tony?" So I'm going to break this down. Number one, get the cards that you get in Arena. Number two, disenchant golden basic cards. JR.
So on number one, the issue I would have actually with it's a really good idea that's been brought up a lot of times. And I agree, because in Magic drafting, I like to be able to keep the cards that I get or limited. It's really cool. The problem with the arena is when you're choosing a card, you now have the option of, do I need this card because it's going to make my deck better? Or do I need this card because I need it in my set? And I think that's the reason why Blizzard's trying to stay away from something like that, because they want people to choose the card that they believe is going to help them win to make the arena better as a thing to play, rather than a way of getting cards that you might need. So it was more for the gameplay reason instead of a card collection reason. The other idea I also thought was very good, but the only thing that I would question on that is if I was to disenchant my basic golden cards, am I going to regret it later? Because how am I going to get them back? And that's the only thing is, like, am I going to have that regret a year from now because I decide now I want to collect golden cards and I've disenchanted them? Is there any way for me to get them back later on? That's the only thing I would have to add to that.
I think I'm in the same boat as you, JR. I think they're really creative solutions, so kudos, because those are really cool solutions that I haven't really heard presented a whole lot, which is cool. They're very unique. Personally, if it's card acquisition, I would just rather Blizzard reward you for either hitting certain ranks on the ladder or leveling up your hero. I think that those are two elegant solutions that allow you to, you know, imagine every two or three levels after level 20, you get a pack. Like, that's just it. So for playing, whether it's with your friends or in Arena or in Tavern Brawl, you're still progressing your character and you're still building your collection. I would say for me, I would rather see that in there. I don't know that you get enough dust from the basic cards as is to make a real meaningful impact on your collection. I don't play a whole lot of Arena, so I can't really say how effective that will be, but it seems like basically you're sextupling the amount of cards that you get from an Arena run, right? At the minimum. And so, at the maximum. And that's sextupling how fast you do that. That's also for Blizzard. that can be kind of a huge ramp up. I don't know business-wise how that would make sense. What do you think, Kev?
I mean, two things, right? So JR hit the nail on the head on the arena thing. The arena solution is cool. And obviously in a physical game, when you draft, you get X many cards, you put a deck together and you keep all of them. So, I mean, to JR's point, it wouldn't just be the 30, you would get all 90, presumably, and you would just own those 90 cards, which in turn would have to have some ramifications for how expensive it was to do the arena, and maybe just how arena played out in general, because for the kind of cost it would now incur, people might want to play more games or see other benefits. I don't know. But absolutely, the problem would be it does create some negative incentives in arena. There may be players who would sign up to do arena because it was the most cost efficient card acquisition method and intentionally lose their games to get back to drafting faster, because you can only have one draft going at a time in the game. So it would actually discourage people from playing the arena because they would just be trying to maximize their card acquisition. Disenchanting the golden basic cards on the other side would depend on how you would calculate their dust value, right? Because as it stands, we don't have a dust value for a basic card. They don't cost anything because you can't craft them. So you'd have to assign them a value. And if you assign them a value of something, say like a common card, the amount of dust you would get from disenchanting all of the golden cards would be kind of irrelevant because it's not very much. Also, in terms of accessibility, not incredibly significant, because by the time you're a player who has any meaningful number of golden basic cards, you've got several classes at a high level, which likely means that you've played a lot of Hearthstone and have a pretty decent sized card collection. Accessibility, when we talk about accessibility, especially on this show, has a lot more to do with the new player acquisition. When somebody who's brand new to the game sees a cool deck that they look up online and they really want to play it, how expensive is it for them to get into that? And I think what's going to end up having to happen for the game long term is there's going to have to be some kind of like starter booster way to get jumped into the game where a player can spend, you know, $15 or whatever the magic number is, because I don't know, I don't work on that kind of stuff. But Blizzard could say, okay, we're going to give you a default deck that's been put together by the dev team. You can buy a class and an archetype for $15. So you spend your $15 and you're given the cards to play a moderately accessible deck like Zoo or Mech Mage or something, where there are some cards in there that cost a decent amount of money or dust or whatever, but you just get them and it gives you a way to jump in and start playing the game rather than feeling like you're forced to drudge your way through trying to collect all of the classic cards and level up your classes using nothing but the basic set, when there's really no efficient way to do that because you want to play against other players, you want to play with your friends, you want to get into it, but everything is so gated. So there just needs to be something that jumpstarts those gates, right? And the solutions you're proposing, like John says, are cool, very new, very innovative, but they help people who are already over that big initial hurdle. And that's, I think, what we're more worried about is somebody who's brand new to the game. How do we get them from A to B? Not somebody who's at B. How do we get them to C? Because that's a problem that there's a ton of solutions to already. And Blizzard has actually done a great job of helping those people with end of season ranked rewards and tavern brawls and all these things that help people who are already over that I'm brand new, I installed Hearthstone yesterday, what do I do hump.
There you have it. Let's go ahead. Let's jump in through the second email really quick. Then we got to go. It's been a long show already. We're already well over an hour. So let's go ahead. I hate it when I say that. Let's jump in. So, hey, well met. Been listening for a couple months and I really enjoy what you guys do. My question is, I've been playing Hearthstone for about 4 months now, only buying Naxx. I roam around rank 15 to 16. What is the next step for me to push to get down toward 10 and below? Thanks for the great work, Augustus O, or he goes by Gus. So interesting. He's got Naxx, so probably not a huge card pool. Rank 15 to 16 is where he's kind of topping out. Where do you go next, Kev?
I mean, it's two things, right? At the end of the day, some portion of it is always going to be card collection. You need to make sure that you're continuing to progress your card collection. So you should be spending time or money on the game to continue to invest in giving yourself more options, because that's always going to be of use to you. You're going to be able to play more competitive decks. And there are plenty of decks out there where if you can just sit down tomorrow and build the, you know, top tier mid-range druid list, you're going to get past rank 15 just by playing a list that is that good and that tight, because someone somewhere who plays this game for a living has spent time and energy perfecting that at a level that wins games when it doesn't deserve to. Outside of that, I think we've spoken to this a fair bit on this episode of the show and on the show in general, but strongly encourage, spend some time with other players. Have other people sit and spectate your games and talk through plays, get some ideas of what someone else would do, learn a little bit more about thinking ahead of your game and knowing how to hold on to cards that you might need to create good, powerful combos. If you look at a deck that requires you to synergize your cards, something like Tempo Mage, for example, you don't just throw down a Naked Flame Waker on turn three and hope for the best that you're going to get the maximum value out of it. You strategize about, you know, okay, I'm playing Tempo Mage, I'm going to hold back the coin, I'm going to hold back those one cost spells, I'm going to wait until I can get efficient use out of them, and you adjust your gameplay to reflect that. And these are things that you will learn over time. There's lots of other things you can do to try to help that. You can pick a class or a style. Like JR plays a lot of aggro, so you can pick that you're an aggro player and work through aggro decks, because it will teach you the same skill set even when you move from one class to another about when to flip from efficiency to burn. It'll teach you a skill set that's useful across the board. But ultimately, I would say get a hand from somebody else. Spend some time with another player of the game, because there's obviously going to be a ceiling for everyone, every player, at some point where they cannot figure out more for themselves and they have to turn to the resources of others. And we've all hit it. John, JR, and I have all been there where at some point you just said, like, I am in over my head. I'm up against more than what I know. I need a second set of eyes on this problem. And that's a life skill, knowing when to turn to somebody for that help. That's not just a Hearthstone thing. That's everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I would say he doesn't say really like what sets he really has at this point. I know he says that he's only bought Nax. So I'm not sure, like, if you have Goblins versus Gnomes at all, if you have Black Rock Mountain or the other sets. I would say if you're looking at adventure modes, I would say League of Explorers is a very high, big set to try to get, buying with gold, or if you want to end up buying it altogether. There's some very, very good cards in that in that adventure mode that you can use. And I would also say just look at like the neutral cards out there that you may not have that are really good in a lot of different decks. For example, if you're looking at Goblins versus Gnomes, trying to get like Piloted Shredder would be a huge one if you don't already have it. Trying to, you know, if you need to craft a legendary, Dr. Boom is probably the best legendary that you can craft in the game, because those cards, those neutral cards, can go in so many different decks. They can play a lot of different things, and by playing a lot of different things, you get to learn a lot of different styles, and by learning a lot of different styles, now you know how to play against those different styles as well. So I think if you were to go down that path, that's the path I would probably go down, is look at what neutral cards you might need to build out your set better. And also look at League of Explorers, because, to be honest, I think that's probably the best adventure mode beyond Nax that you can get right now.
I am by no means the authority for improving yourself in Hearthstone, but I know somebody who is. And he says, play a lot, get a coach, or both. And honestly, for a lot of that too, you know, to Kevin's point, play with somebody. Getting a set of eyes doesn't have to necessarily be coaching, but play with somebody. It really helps. And there's a lot of people too who are, you know, high single digit players who will honestly love the opportunity to just feel that they're coaching somebody. Even if they're not legend players, like, they're going to teach you things and skills that are really going to help you take your game further. The second thing I would say, try to build a meta deck. I think Kevin really kind of touched on it, but try to build one that is just, you've got it. I've done that with Katie. She's like a rank 19 player on her own, bless her heart. You know, she can get there, she can get her card back, but on her own skill, that's where she tops out. We built her a mid-range druid. I taught her how to play with it. We sit down about an hour a week and do a little coaching thing, and she gets up to rank 15, 14 playing maybe 60 games a month, like, not a whole lot of games at all, and not a very high win rate. And so if you're dedicating more time than that and you can build a decent deck and you can get somebody else's eyes on what you're doing, you're going to find that you're going to get over that hump really quick and start winning some games, and you're going to see single digits. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Let's get out of here. Ah, this concludes episode number 45. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us in the chat room and listening to us every week. We really appreciate it. Let's go ahead and run down through the things, Kevin.
Yeah, starters, Patreon. We are super excited to be incredibly close to our monthly bonus episode, which would mean you would get to listen to us ramble on about this game we all love and occasionally hate even more often than we already do. So, if you're not already a supporter and would like to be, you can go to patreon.com/wellmetpodcast. Any donation means the world to us, guys. It enables us to do so much more with this show, and we're immensely grateful to all of our patrons, including new this week, Rad Gamer Ryski. That's really awesome. Thank you so much. Also, just so everybody knows, we are working on the all new rewards structure. So we will have our new patron Facebook group where we're going to share decks, help our patrons out, work through the stuff they want to do in terms of maybe some in-house games or a little tournament, and access to show notes for people who are supporting us at that level. So you'll be able to see in advance what we're putting together for each week for the show. It's all coming to you guys right away here in February, as soon as we get a chance to kind of stitch it all together and have it ready when January processes. So again, thank you so much. It means the world to us.
GR.
Yeah, so this week we had the iTunes reviews. We had one in the USA from Manning SMS, who I believe was Peyton Manning. And I believe he probably did that on his phone, thus the SMS.
It's a text message.
While he was playing the AFC Championship game, beating Tom Brady. I'm pretty sure.
I love being in Denver. Yeah. I love being in Denver. It's so cool. Streets were totally dead. I didn't get to watch the game. It was at work. It was just totally dead. Not a single person in the store. We just watched the Broncos game for 4 hours. It was beautiful.
I mean,
Thank you for the iTunes reviews, by the way.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks.
All right.
I was going to say something else, but I lost my track of mind. So
sorry,
take it away, John.
I do that. Kevin, shoutouts.
Well, I mean, I think I got to go the obvious route this week. Thank you so much to everybody who took the time to watch my entry into the So You Think You Can Cast contest, who supported me and encouraged me to do it. Family, friends, fans of the show, everybody has just been so good. And I'm overwhelmed, honestly, by how... By the response, by everybody saying how excited they are to see me get up on stage and do it, by all of the kind things people have had to say about it. People say the internet's going to be a terrible, evil place where you'll hear nothing but bad things and people are going to be mean. And I had none of those experiences. I've had nothing but just love and support from everybody. And it's awesome. So shout outs to the other people who made it through and are going to be up on that stage. D2, Soddle, Aquablood, Songbird, and Raven. It's going to be a treat to work with you guys. I'm incredibly excited, just ecstatic beyond words, and it's a real dream for me. Thank you.
You're welcome. JR, what about you this week, man?
Oh, I have a couple things. We set up an Extra Life charity team with Blizz Pro. If you would like to come and join our team and raise money for the Children's Miracle Network, that would be awesome. You can go to extralife.blizzpro.com and click the little join team and pick the hospital in your area that you want to help support. I'm hoping that a Team Blizz Pro can raise at least $5,000 this year. I don't think that's too far of a stretch to get there. So if you'd like to join us and help raise that money, that would be awesome. We do have some prizes that we will be giving away. I don't have full details of them, but there will be battle.net gift cards, Amazon.com gift cards, and then probably some other things that I can pull from some of our partners like SteelSeries and stuff like that. I know that we will be giving prizes to those who have raised the most, the top three who have raised the most, and we'll have some random drawings as well. So if you want to come join that, that would be awesome. Also, come join us on Discord. We have a Discord server at you can go there and join us, discord.blizzpro.com. I know all three of us are at least somewhat active in there and talking there, and it's a nice little voice chat and also just the chat room text chat thing as well. I'm hoping that we can use that more and come join the whole Blues Pro team. Well Met's there, West March Workshop, Heroes Power Hour, and the rest of the Blizz Pro team. Right now we're playing a lot of Diablo 3 in there, so if that's your thing, come join us.
If I'm ever playing Rocket League or Hearthstone, I am in Discord, so come hang out. I always love to have someone to chat with.
Definitely. So how about you, John?
Not a whole lot this week. Got a lot of stuff to do. I'm up every morning at about 4:30 in the morning, 5 in the morning, so doing that stuff. So I actually am streaming in the morning, like really early, like 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. almost exclusively. So come check me out there if you're up really early in the morning, because it's been actually really fun. A lot of people have come out because there's not a whole lot to watch at that time, but it's the only time I really have to play and stream. So I'm doing that. And other than that, not a whole lot. So let's just go. Oh, I did forget one thing. We do record the payload Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Twitch.tv/BlizzPro on your podcast feeds. Friday morning. It's a really fun time. We're finally getting back to beta here in February. And so we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. And it's really fun. Jimmy's great. Kevin's great. It's just a great time. Let's get out of here. So first, big thanks to Jake Butineau over at jakebutineau.ca. That's B-U-T-I-N-E-A-U. It's Canadian. It's why it's hard to spell. Head on over there. He's got an awesome portfolio of incredible music. Big thanks to Dread Scythe of Scythe Designs for doing all of our logo work and things like that. Email us, wellmet@blizzbro.com. Send us your tweets at wellmetpodcast. Patreon.com/wellmetpodcast. And of course, on our subreddit /wellmetpodcast. We'll see you guys next week for episode number 46. Only 5 more to go to 50. We'll see you guys next week.
You can find John on Twitter at @KickedTripod and on Twitch at twitch.tv/KickedTripod. You can find JR on Twitter at @Eldorian and on Twitch at twitch.tv/BlizzPro. And you can find Kevin on Twitter at @LackOfRealism and on Twitch at twitch.tv/OdinTV. BlizzPro.com. Beyond Noob.